Hello, and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go AU Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
I'm here, and I'm still mad about the hockey game on Saturday night.
And U Street.
I did not watch the hockey game last night. Hey, y'all.
All right, so without any further delay, let's just start talking NCAA tournament. Gophers versus Louisville, the 7 versus the 10 going on here in Des Moines. First game of the NCAA tournament, 11:15 a.m. Central on Thursday. I'm going to turn it right over to U Street to expand upon the little bit of previewing he did in our Great Takes Less Filling right after the brackets were announced.
Yeah, well, unless Bradley wins the 2:15 matchup, it is impossible for the second round to not be a rematch of a game that occurred during the year. And doing a little bracketology, I think that game will probably turn out in Michigan State's favor no matter who they play. But the far more important game that we are concerned about, Louisville and Minnesota, upon additional looking into this game, Zips of Akron will have the general preview for the blog coming up tomorrow. But I gotta say, I'm kind of pessimistic about this one. I think Louisville's a talented team. They have a lot of players who present obvious mismatches against Minnesota. This is particularly true if Matt Stockman remains out with a concussion. So thank you for an incidental elbow from Travion Williams for that possibility. It's good to know that every time Richard Pitino's teams enter the tournament, some important player is injured. And it's less good to note that this year that player might be Matt Stockman. The way that I can see Minnesota winning this game, obviously, as I mentioned in the preview, you're going to have to get a three-score attack. Amir Coffey and Jordan Murphy are going to have to play out of their minds. But if Matt Stockman is unwilling to go, there are two players who I think become particularly important. The first one is Daniel Oturo, who has shown the capability this year as to why you might have thought he'd been on the Big Ten All-Freshman team. He's a very talented player, gets a lot of blocks, can score from multiple places, improved as a scorer throughout. That's really positive. Unfortunately, he also has a track record of fouling, particularly fouling after getting into poor position. That will imply that if Daniel Oturo is fouling, the second player who shows up is now going to be Jarvis Amirsa. Jarvis Amirsa was serviceable in the game against Michigan, but he'll have to play a very good basketball game. And we're now relying, I think, on a player who, well, I know he hasn't played all season, but the fact that there's an open question that they're going to have to rely on him for some extended minutes is really, if he's playing an absolutely incredible game and everything else is true, I think the Gophers actually have a surprisingly good chance to win this game. But I remain skeptical if that's the situation they find themselves in, that good things will be coming to the University of Minnesota.
Andy, do you have any thoughts, positive or negative? Like, how are you feeling coming into Thursday morning?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I've gone back and forth in this thinking that, you know, if it's the Gophers we've seen play Purdue, then I have really good thoughts that I think Minnesota will win the first round game and advance to play probably Michigan State on Saturday. If it's the Gophers we've seen, well, against Michigan, obviously, but if we've seen, you know, the Gophers we've seen play against Penn State or the Gophers we've seen play against a lot of the other sort of more middle-of-the-road Big Ten teams, you know, I have a feeling that Louisville's probably going to pull this one out. You know, Louisville's got a fairly decent inside-out game. From initial research, it looks like Louisville's guards would be their weak point. The problem is Minnesota hasn't really had the guard play to really take advantage of that. Unless you're going to be able to really get Amir Coffey going off as Amir Coffey can, you know, I don't see Dupree McBrayer, I don't see Gabe Kalscher really making a huge difference. And I mean, if Gabe's on fire, Gabe's on fire. But I think the bigger advantage would be more sort of the penetrate and pop, and we haven't really seen any of that play out of our guard play except for, you know, Coffey on occasion. So in that case, the matchup isn't amazing. I think, honestly, we'll come down to can our big stay out of foul trouble. If Murphy or Turo get into foul trouble, and especially if Stockman can't go, if we're seeing more than 8 minutes of Jarvis Amirsa, if we're seeing more than 5 minutes of Michael Hurt, I think the Gophers are in a bit of deep trouble. You know, we'll get into predictions later on, but it's really going to depend on how Minnesota plays on offense efficiently. I think you know, I think defensively they can do enough to keep it themselves in the game for sure. If they can hit their shots, I think they've got a decent chance to win. If they're struggling from the field, or if Coffey's not having a great game, I could see the Gophers struggling a little bit. So, all that saying, I'm still a little wishy-washy, but you know, I'm not saying it'll be a blowout either way, but I think the Gophers are going to have their work cut out for them on Thursday.
You guys realize that you're saying Louisville wrong, right? All the time? Like, it's not Louisville. It's not Louisville. That's not how you say it.
Hey, just because you now live in the South doesn't mean we have to go along with that crap.
I'd like to point out, Chris, that in addition to the highly professional nature of this blog, this is also our way of trash-talking the Cardinals that are our opponent.
Yeah, no, I just don't think you know how to say it.
Louisville.
There it is. That's actually even better than I say it.
Louisville.
Shame on your house, Andy. Shame on your house.
Hey,
you know what other house that we should be shaming? The NCAA's house for the net rankings.
You hate the net rankings. Like,
I do hate the net rankings.
You've been waiting all week to be able to go off on the net rankings.
Thank you for showing how great my social life is there, Chris. But yes, I have. And mainly because if I was NC State, I might be a little perturbed at not being in the NCAA tournament right now.
Yeah, but objectively, they played a garbage schedule.
Well, that's true, but also objectively, they were in the top 40 of the net. They were a quad one win for other teams in the ACC.
Now, just to jump in here, but I mean, we need to clarify garbage schedule.
It was literally the worst strength of schedule of any team in all of NCAA.
Yes, it was out of conference schedule. That's the thing, is to get in. Their strength of schedule wasn't that bad, but that's because they played an ACC schedule where you played Duke twice, North Carolina twice, Syracuse twice, etc. Yes, they were dead last, 353 out of 353 in out-of-conference strength of schedule. That means take the Glenn Mason days of cupcakes and then, like, top that with about a 6-foot tower of Cool Whip, and that's the level of strength of schedule that North Carolina State played in the non-conference season this year.
I would eat that cupcake.
That does sound delicious.
Brought to you by HelloFresh.
Is it red velvet?
Well, I suppose if it's NC State, it's got to be red and white. So, you know, sure, we'll call it yes. Red velvet just for you.
Delicious. All right, so here's my thing with the net. Like, I'm actually cutting you off, Alex. I'm going to give my thoughts before. I'm going to make you wait to give your thoughts. Just that's how mean I am today. I've read a couple articles, and after just scanning their logic quickly and looking at a quick run at the RPI and the net, seems to make sense to me, is that the net was not used for whether you got into the tournament. At least it doesn't seem to have been. But then once they place teams into the tournament by whatever other, you know, ranking they chose, RPI, KenPom, I don't know, probably more likely to be RPI. Once they did that, the net seemed to be used to determine where you got seated. And real briefly, that makes some sense to me in the sense that, you know, that way you're not rewarding the teams that played absolute garbage out of conference schedules. But at the same time, you're also not penalizing teams if their attempts to schedule a decent to really decent schedule while not going full Power 5 across the board, if some of those, you know, mid-majors they scheduled ended up being crappier than expected, they're also not penalized. Wisconsin fans would be interested to note that under this plan, they would not have had to waste all of that breath bitching about where they got seated in 2017, which was still a delicious amount of pain on their part. Thank you, Wisconsin fans. I am in general okay with that as an idea. That said, I'm pretty sure, Street, that you've got, you know, problems with that. So have at it.
Yeah, I got a few problems with it. The primary problem is that we don't actually know what the ranking is. And here is why that matters. I can tell you that broadly speaking, the net ranking is composed of five categories. It's composed of a team value index, which broadly is based on game results against Division I opponents only, and that factors somehow the opponent, the location, and who won, which is not totally RPI, but sounds RPI-ish. Then I have an efficiency ranking, which is your offensive efficiency subtracted off your defensive efficiency. Then I have winning percentage. Then I have adjusted winning percentage, which is weighted based on the location as well as the loss, or so if you lost versus you win. And then I have a scoring margin, but that scoring margin is capped at 10 points. The cap at 10 points makes no sense, because if I'm trying to be as efficient as possible and I'm really good on offense and really good on defense, I'll beat a lot of teams by more than 10 points. And that is, in fact, helpful information. If I beat a team by 20 and another team beats that team by 10, the team that beat the team by 20, the original one, should be better. Secondly, scoring margin may be capped at 10 points, but it's going to come back in general in efficiency rankings as well. So I got those five categories. But I only know broadly what's in some of them. I actually kind of know what's in net efficiency, because they just stole that formula, honestly, from Dean Oliver way back in the day and did basically nothing to it. But I don't know the weights of net efficiency, winning percentage, adjusted winning percentage, or scoring margin. I also don't know the weight that's put on team value index, or specifically how much each factor inside the index is weighted. That is ridiculous. The criticism of the RPI was that teams gamed the RPI, which, yeah, any measurement that can be gamed will be gamed. Of course they will. But this ranking is both gameable in the sense that when Patino was playing, you know, Illinois at home, the starters stayed in to make sure they won by more than 10 points. So there's ways that you can game this ranking as well. But also, like, who cares if you can game it? The whole point of a ranking system, in some sense, is try and be objective, which means you should be transparent. So that's one. This is true for, like, basically every kind of ranking system. If it's not transparent, it's like how things actually come up. You can't actually look at it and decide whether or not it's a reasonable way of doing something. The team value index, honestly, like, you could just stick in, is the location close to or far away from Cincinnati? And that's how I'm going to determine whether or not it's good or not.
That's a great ranking tool, I think.
It might be the Chris travel ranking, you know, no, might be excellent.
We should be incentivizing everyone to put their games right by me.
So that's the first thing, and that's like just a general criticism thing. The second thing is they didn't even bloody use it. If they broadly use it for seeds but don't use it to determine who gets into the NCAA tournament, the whole notion of something be a quadrant win or a good win versus a bad win is ridiculous. How is it a good win if you beat NC State, 33rd in the net? So all the teams that beat NC State acquire a quad one win. So this is one of, if it's on the road, top 75 teams in the country. If it's a home, top 25, top 30 or something, right?
I mean, you're making sense.
So it's in that range, somewhere in that range. But that team is not good enough to get into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're making sense, but the thought process there, if that's what they're actually doing, doesn't make sense.
If I'm using this for selections, I should actually use it, which means St. John should not be in the tournament. Texas is not in the tournament. They were a top 40 net ranking team. Finally, literally, like, it's possible in the sense that maybe it occurs in the team value index, but it's unclear. It makes no sense how this thing is determining strength of schedule. But strength of schedule kind of matters. And one of the things that you might take from the NC State experience if you are a coach next year is we probably shouldn't schedule the worst schedule in the NCAA, but, like, scheduling something in the, like, low 100s, high 200s out of conference is probably good. Especially if we're in the Big Ten or the ACC. Because that's going to improve our efficiency numbers. It's going to improve our winning percentage. It's going to improve our adjusted winning percentage. Our scoring margin is regularly going to be over 10. So four of these five categories I'm going to radically improve. And because my conference schedule is going to come in, I'll still be able to acquire enough quad one and quad two wins. Which means you should expect Minnesota to play a lot of teams that look like Boston College next year. Ideally, they should beat them, but that's what you're looking at. And that seems to me to not be incentivizing the right thing either. If I want to pick the best 64 teams, or 68, because why not? If I want to pick the best 64 teams in the country, then the ranking system that I do to do that should not be something that I toss out once I actually have to pick the best 64, 68 teams in the country.
Touche. Andy, do you have any disagreements with that whatsoever?
Yeah, I got nothing. I am not a net expert, but just to throw out another, you know, hypocritical point, as Street and I have brought up in previous podcasts, the fact that, you know, supposedly the men's selection committee is still using net while the women's selection committee is still using RPI is an interesting point of view. And you know, I guess the question is will that evolve over the next season or two? Or will that be something that, you know, continues to be separate but equal?
This might be the only time in history for which separate but equal is actually beneficial to the marginalized group.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often. But it'll be interesting to look and see what the NCAA decides to do on that, because, you know, Lord knows they've never been the most consistent group in the world and make decisions after thought out planning rather than just on the whim of a chance. So, but yeah, other than that, I agree with what Street all said. It's sort of a crapshoot, and, you know, I think people were looking for clarification and seeing how things were getting selected with the new rankings, and I think, honestly, going into next season, nobody still really has any true idea of exactly what is important, what's not important, how it's being used, et cetera, et cetera. So I imagine we'll be having this same exact conversation a year from now.
So what I'm taking away from this is net bad, NCAA bad, scheduling a whole bunch of sporting events as close to Chris as possible, good.
Yeah, I'm excited to put out the Chris net rankings, which we will begin doing next year.
Sweet. Looking forward to it. All right, women's hockey. Women's hockey is continuing its march towards an NCAA title. Andy, just you want to take us through real quick what happened with their win over the weekend?
Yeah, last Saturday the Gophers hosted Princeton in a NCAA quarterfinal. And it was about as one would expect. The Tigers finished in a tie for second in the ECAC, which is arguably, along with the Big Ten, the top two hockey conferences in women's hockey right now. And Princeton was a tough team. They have the number one scoring line in the country. They have the nation's top scorer and the nation's number four scorer on the same line. And they took it to the Gophers. I'm blanking now on the nation's top scorer. I should have pulled the article up. But she scored twice against Minnesota. And had Princeton with a 2-1 lead going late into the second period. Minnesota got their best performance of the year from the players who everybody thought was going to be leading this team in scoring. The pots and pan line of Sarah Potomac, Amy Potomac, and Kelly Panic showed up when they needed it most, combined for 4 goals to put the Gophers ahead. Panic scored the eventual game winner with about 8.5 minutes left in the third period, and they added a couple empty netters to win 5-2. So the Gophers are back in the Frozen Four for the 7th season out of the last 8, with last year being the only year they've missed. And it's a who's who of the last decade of women's hockey in the Frozen Four. You've got the number 2 Gophers, number 1 Wisconsin, number 4 Clarkson, who's the 2-time defending champion, and then you have who Minnesota will play in the first national semifinal Friday afternoon, Cornell Big Red. Cornell went to 3 seed Northeastern and upset the team from Northeastern on their home ice 2-1 in overtime. They also are from the ECAC, finished in that same 3-way tie for second place. You know, they're not going to be as high scoring a team as some of the other ones. They're going to be a much more defensive squad. But if the Minnesota team that showed up on Saturday and has showed up for most of the year comes, I have no doubt that they'll be playing for another national title on Sunday against either Wisconsin or Clarkson. which should be an amazing game. Both those teams can put the puck in the net, and both those teams can play defense. So I'm really glad that they're playing in a national semifinal and not against Minnesota on Friday, because I think it would be a much tougher matchup for the Gophers. But, you know, like I said, I put this in my article, but looking back, literally the last time that a team that wasn't currently at the Frozen Four this weekend had won a national title would have been UMD back in 2010. Otherwise, the Gophers won four titles in that stretch. Wisconsin won one, and Clarkson's won the other three. So chances are that the string will continue, and one of those three teams will be coming away with another national title to keep that streak alive. Let's just hope it's Minnesota when we're talking next week, rather than Shutter Wisconsin or Clarkson being the first team since UMD to win three in a row.
So at this point, like, what would you say prediction wise? Like, if you had to kind of game out what you saw for the weekend, where do you see it going?
Like I said, I think if the Gophers play up to their potential, which they should, now this is a team that's been there before. They've got a few younger players, but they know what they're doing. I think they'll get the win over Cornell on Friday. So I think they'll be playing in the title game. You know, honestly, whether between Wisconsin or Clarkson, that will be, I'm guessing, a one-goal game or a two-goal game if somebody adds an empty net or late. That one will go down to the wire, and I could see either team winning that. Wisconsin's a bit deeper, but Clarkson probably has the better top line. But both have incredibly good goaltenders. Wisconsin has Christian Campbell, who was the Big Ten goalie of the year the last 2 years. And Clarkson, actually, ironically, stole Cassidy Suave, who, if anybody follows women's hockey, you listen to us, I know not many, but she was the national goalie of the year when she led Ohio State to their first Frozen Four appearance, and then grad transferred to Clarkson, and now has been in net for the Green Knights this season for Clarkson. So she's leading two different teams back-to-back to the Frozen Four, and has really been tough in net. So I can't tell you which one of those two teams will win. You know, it will go, if Minnesota's going to win the title, I'd love them to beat the Badgers in the title, just so we can just obviously shut down all the Wisconsin fans and have another thing over them. If Minnesota's going to lose the national title, I'd prefer they lose to Clarkson. Just because, well, I can handle that a lot more than I can losing to Wisconsin. So, but I have a feeling Minnesota will be playing for the title on Sunday. I'm just not sure who, and it's going to be a tight, down-to-the-wire game either way, I think. So I'll give you the homer pick and say I hope Minnesota comes back with the title. But honestly, you know, those teams are pretty evenly matched up. So your guess is as good as mine which one of Minnesota, Clarkson, and Wisconsin is going to run away with the hardware on Sunday.
So shifting to the men, just how badly did the men get screwed at Notre Dame?
Can I briefly interject so that Andy can calm his nerves before blowing a gasket on this? I know that they got screwed because I learned something about hockey over the weekend. It made it to me.
Okay, so they got really screwed. Council's just going to all agree that they got screwed. Andy, have at it. Your feelings on them getting royally screwed by the Big Ten refs?
Yeah, it was arguably one of the worst calls you'll ever see. Minnesota and Notre Dame in the Big Ten semifinals Saturday night in South Bend. The referees called three penalties all game. The first one was early in the game, was non-consequential. They didn't call another penalty until there were 3 minutes left in regulation, where they got Brandon McManus for a hook on what was fairly blatantly a huge dive on the Notre Dame player. Minnesota killed that one off and sent the game to overtime. And then 30 seconds into overtime, the referees whistled Tyler Sheary for a hook. And you can't see me right now because this is a podcast, but I'm doing the air quotes, hooking. Sheehy basically lifted the Notre Dame player's stick, which is a totally 100% legal move. The Notre Dame player tripped over his own skate, and the referee saw him lurch forward and called a penalty. It's not a penalty in overtime. It's not a penalty in the first minute of the game. It's not a penalty in high school hockey. It's not a penalty.
Yet the Gophers went on the penalty kill, and Notre Dame, a minute into the penalty, scored the eventual game winner. And now they will host. What makes it even worse is Penn State then beat Ohio State in the other semifinal on Sunday. So Notre Dame will now host Penn State for the Big Ten title. Had the Gophers beaten the Irish, they would be hosting the Big Ten title game this Saturday at Mariucci. But instead, the Gopher season is over, and you're already seeing the exodus of players. Gopher star goalie Matt Robson signed a two-year deal with the Minnesota Wild on Monday, so he's leaving with a year of eligibility remaining. And it will come down to the wire here in the next few weeks. I think it's, at best case, 50-50 that Rem Pitlick led the team in scoring this year with 45 points, is currently tied for 6th in the nation in scoring, probably will be named a Hobie Baker finalist when the top 10 is announced tomorrow morning. His draft rights are held with the Nashville Predators. I think it's 50-50 shot whether he's back for his senior year next year or whether he decides to sign a professional contract. The only thing the Gophers do have going for them is the Predators have a pretty steep lineup, so it's not likely that Pitlick will be cracking the NHL roster anytime soon. He'll be fighting for playing time in the AHL with the Milwaukee Admirals, and they have a fairly stacked team there as well. In fact, fellow Gopher Tommy Novak will probably be joining that roster here when his draft rights are held by the Predators as well, and he's a senior graduating, so he'll be probably signing and going to the Admirals here in the next week or so, I would expect. So, hopefully Pitlick decides he'd rather stick around and play a senior season with the Gophers and know that he can go to the same spot a year from now, fighting for a roster spot with Milwaukee with a chance to earn a trip to the big club. But, we've seen this situation time and time again where NHL teams sort of just apply a little bit of pressure and the player doesn't really have much of a choice. So, like I said, I put it about a 50-50 shot right now that Pitlick's back next year. But if he's not back, this Gopher team is going to be young. There's a Star Tribune article put out by Megan Ryan, the Gopher beat writer. Minnesota's already losing 9 seniors this year, plus Robson's now leaving. The Gopher senior class, including Pitlick, next year is only 3 players. So Minnesota's roster could be kind of like the football team, where it could be basically 90% freshmen and sophomores coming into the year next year. You're going to have 3 entirely new goalies on the team, as with Robson leaving, Shearhorn and Brock Kotz graduating. So it's going to be a young team. Luckily the Gophers do have one major piece returning, and somebody who picked up a big award today.
Who is that?
That would be Sammy Walker. Sammy Walker, Gopher phenomenal freshman, was named the Big Ten Freshman of the Year today. 27 points on the season, led all Big Ten freshmen in scoring. A year ago, he was Mr. Hockey, winning a state title for Edina, and did not seem to miss a beat, joining the collegiate ranks and played a big role on the Gophers' freshman line, along with Blake McLaughlin and Nathan Burke late in the season, and really sparking some offense for this team. So Walker, at least for the next year or two, will be a force to be reckoned with. And if Pitlick leads, he pretty much turns into the Gophers' number one scoring threat next season. But you'd love to have Pitlick come back and have a 1-2 punch of Walker and Pitlick still. So there's still some good parts left, but Bob Motzko will fully start the rebuilding effort with a lot of his own players starting next fall.
I am sure the fact that they are still rebuilding in the second year of the Motzko era will go over just fantastically with the national title or bust crowd in our fan base. Shout out to you, national title or bust crowd. Your rationality and patience will surely be rewarded. I learned something new in the middle of all that. I didn't actually know that Milwaukee was the Preds AHL team. So that's a bit of knowledge bomb that you dropped on me, Andy. So thank you for that. Softball, actually turning it around. Softball started out a little rough, but all of a sudden they've got the number 12 ranking in the softball RPI and kind of on a little bit of a tear here. Andy, just Real quick, what good news do we have out of the softball world?
Yeah, the Gopher softball team got off to a bit of a slow start. You know, they lost their first six ranked games of the season, dropping games to SEC teams, Tennessee, Ole Miss. Got clobbered by Florida State, who's the number one team in the country right now, and then lost two tough games down at Alabama. But they have doubled back, and they've won three of their last four games against ranked opponents, being James Madison, and then took two out of three from then number nine Texas down in Austin. And then they went 4-1 last weekend against all non-ranked teams. But the Gophers now have their record up to 19-8 on the season. The first national RPI stats came out this week, and like Chris said, we are number 12 in the country. Technically, if the NCAA goes by RPI, which sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, the top 16 teams at the end of the year would be expected to host regionals. Of course, we saw how that worked out for the Gophers a couple years ago when they got screwed and had to go down to Alabama instead of getting one up here in the Twin Cities. The thing Minnesota's going to have to do is they're going to have to continue to fly through their schedule. You know, they don't play a tough Big Ten schedule. They don't get Michigan, who's probably the number one or number two Big Ten team on the schedule this year. They don't get Ohio State, who's probably the number three team. So they're going to have to go through the Big Ten with only a few blemishes if they're going to keep that RPI up. They'll get a chance to raise it tomorrow night. The Gophers play a primetime game that you'll be able to watch on TV if you're not watching on anything else, basketball, whatever. They play number 6 Florida on the SEC Network live tomorrow night. That game's at 6 p.m. Central Time. And it'll be an interesting revenge game as Florida has catcher Kendall Lindemann on their roster. And if that name sounds familiar...
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
Kendall Lindemann, who was the reigning 2-time Big Ten Player of the Year for Minnesota, decided to transfer this fall and ended up with the Gators, and is playing perfectly well for them, doing exactly what you did for Minnesota, hitting about 400, hitting several home runs, RBIs. You know, we never got an official reason for the transfer, but it sounds like she and the Gophers... new coach now in her second season, Stephanie Traxel, didn't quite get along well. But the Gophers have found a new power threat. They have a freshman by the name of Natalie Den Hartog. She is currently leading the Big Ten with 9 home runs. So they found somebody to get some more power back in this lineup with the loss of Lindemann, which is good. You know, it's hard to replace a 2-time first team All-American and 2-time conference player of the year in your lineup. It leaves a bit of a hole. But the Gophers are on their way. Like I said, they've got their last, and actually I didn't even realize looking at the schedule, their last true non-conference game is against the Gators tomorrow night, and they start Big Ten play on Friday as they go to Maryland for a 3-game set. So it's rapidly turning into spring season here as the winter teams will see their seasons end here by the end of the week, and the spring teams, softball, baseball, track, are jumping full bore into things.
Y'all still have snow?
It is rapidly melting. It was 45 here today. It's supposed to be, knock on wood, 60 and sunny on Saturday. So the snow is disappearing very quickly, which is great for us, but is going to be absolutely horrific for people downstream on the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers here in the next 10 days. If anybody's following what's happened to the area around Omaha, they're having some absolutely horrible flooding. Due to the record snowfall they had this year. Hopefully things won't be quite as bad here in the Twin Cities, but I would expect further downstream in the Mississippi, if we continue to get the rapid melt that we're getting, things are not going to be pretty here soon.
Be safe out there, folks. Do not, you know, listen to the podcast while fording a river. That doesn't sound like a really good idea. Not safe Oregon Trail behavior. HelloFresh update this week is pretty simple. HelloFresh pro tip for everyone listening. When you receive your box, don't bring it inside, get distracted, throw a jacket over it, and then forget that it's there for 3 days. The meat they include in the HelloFresh box, while well, you know, properly refrigerated for the shipping, not so much, you know, 3 days later when you realize you haven't opened your box when you go to make the food and you don't find any of the ingredients where you normally put them.
You are a gourmet, sir.
I really truly
am. We do have to give him slight credit that at least he realized it would probably be wise not to cook it instead of just going, well, I'll just cook the hell out of it and see what happens. So, you know, some small credit there that while your chefdom needs some work, your food safety is on par.
You know, I try to put those critical thinking skills to work where I can. Thankfully, this was a series of meals where the remaining ingredients could be cooked successfully. For example, pasta. But yeah.
I know that the word you used there was could. Were they cooked successfully?
I mean, they haven't been cooked yet. I got discouraged by my failure and did not complete the meals. I basically got really annoyed with myself and pulled a frozen meal out of the freezer.
Do you think we're all going to be annoyed on Thursday? Not about your HelloFresh.
No, about the Louisville, Minnesota game. Yeah, well, I mean, maybe I should cook HelloFresh on Thursday too, so I can, you know, do the Juicy Lucy meal. I don't know. I'm not probably going to be that annoyed. I'm excited they made the tournament. I think that's a positive. If they play like absolute crap, I'll be annoyed. If they you know, keep it manageable and lose, I'll just kind of shrug my shoulders and move on with my day, I think. So I'm going to go with a prediction of Minnesota loses by 8, and I feel okay about it the rest of the day. Andy, how about you?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I've been going back and forth, back and forth. I think, you know, same thing. As long as it's a decent game and you know, I prefer they not get blown out. And the thing that would really frustrate me and has frustrated me with this team this year is where they play relatively good for 27, 28 minutes. And then, you know, think the first Purdue game in West Lafayette where they played really good for about 28 minutes. And then all of a sudden they forgot how to play basketball. And we saw a 13-point lead disappear and turn into a 15-point Purdue lead in about 5 minutes. You know, I think Louisville has the potential to do that if the Gophers decide to get lax. But, you know, I'm gonna stick with pretty close to what you. I think it'll be a good game throughout, but Louisville will pull it out in the end, and I'll say the Cardinals win by 6 points. We'll just throw out a score, say 73-67.
Street?
If this game is such that it's a first to 70, the first team to 70 is going to win, I think Louisville wins, but Minnesota against the spread. So that would be two possessions.
All right, so another prediction. It always feels like either Thursday or Friday is the great day of upsets, or at least exciting games, if not upset heavy. It never feels like you get them spread out, or that certainly you never see both days go crazy. Which day is going to be the crazy one this year? Is it going to be a Thursday crazy or a Friday crazy?
It's going to be a Friday crazy because Virginia plays Gardner Webb on March 22nd at 3:10 in the afternoon.
Yes, that's right. We're all Gardner Webb all the time over here.
The Wisconsin-Oregon game is on the 22nd. I think that actually is going to be a legitimately really fun game to watch because both teams play relatively similar styles, and Oregon came hot. So there's your potential 12-5 upset. You also have, I mean, a lot of the top things. Iowa State and Ohio State, as well as Houston and Georgia State, are both situations. Iowa State at Ohio State is a 6-11 if Caleb Weston is playing. Potentially Ohio State is a bit underseeded there. Houston should be really good, but they're also they were fourth in the net ranking. So think about that for a little bit. But Georgia State is a mid-major. you know, low major with potential like weirdness to occur on that front. So I think there are a lot of games on the 22nd. Also Cincinnati, Iowa, which I think will be a very good game, mostly because it fulfills part of the Chris net in that one of those teams is from Cincinnati.
And it's being played in Columbus, which is close by.
Yes. I'll throw out that I think you've glossed over the other game that is most ripe for potential upset on Friday as well, is I think 13-seed UC Irvine against 4-seed Kansas State has got some potential, especially as it came out that Kansas State will be missing one of their starters due to a foot injury. The Anteaters can score the ball and can play defense. I saw that they're the nation's best two-point defense in the country this year. So I like the Anteaters maybe to pull out an upset in that one. The game I'm the most excited for, probably to watch, is going to be the Murray State-Marquette game Thursday afternoon. I think that one has high potential for great drama.
I'm really hoping Thursday is good because that's the day I'm working from home and have the best ability to, you know, watch.
And it is also the day for which Louisville is playing Minnesota. And if we're hoping for upsets, well, we would prefer them to occur on Thursday than on Friday.
Touche. All right. Well, everybody, enjoy it. It's the best time of the year. It's March Madness. If you're not excited about this time of year, I don't want to talk to you. You're a horrible person. And on that very friendly note, go Gophers. Skyuma. Row the boat.